Welcome back, everybody, to The Arrow. My name's Chandler.
My name's Tony.
And Tony, how are we doing today?
I'm doing amazing because I had regular Oreos today, which are the superior Oreo.
Do we have to start this fight right now? Do we have to start this fight right now?
No, because, I mean, it's over, right? The statement has been said.
No. I'm a golden Oreo boy. Stay golden, yeah, pony
that's,
boy.
That's
stay
just because you're not a chocolate boy.
I am a chocolate boy.
Yeah, you're a beautiful chocolate man.
Oh, my gosh. Anyways, Tony, I got back from running errands.
Yes, sir.
Rewatched the episode, fell asleep, and then woke up like 3 minutes before you texted me.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are. It's weird because I don't typically take naps during the day.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a napper. I never fall asleep during the day.
I love naps.
So I'm like disoriented because like, it was bright when I went into the room to like watch the episode, and it's not anymore. And that's kind of weird. It's darker earlier now too.
Yeah. I don't like it. It messes with me so bad. This whole week has been, regardless of like everything that's been happening, just the fact that it gets dark so soon, it makes me like almost anxious. As I'm going through the week, I'm like, I need to do stuff. Like, I didn't get enough things done. It's already almost dark. But I'm like, oh no, I still got time. Like, I still have a good chunk of the day left, even though it's like 4:30 in like, you know, afternoon light.
Yeah, no, back when I was working like at the college, like at the college. I mean, I still work at the college, just like.
Like physically going?
Yeah. We would leave work at like around 4:30 around this time of year, and it would be like dark.
Yeah.
And I'm not used to it now. And I think that, being inside like my own house more often is going to kind of mess with me in that way. Cause I'm like, it should be brighter. And also because like I have like where I work, like the lights are on the entire day. Like I don't have a window over here. So like I need the lights to be on all day. So like, I don't really get a sense of time. How much time has passed ever anymore?
Yeah. So it's difficult.
But that's where we're at. Tony, why don't you tell everybody where they can find us on the internet?
You can find us on, what are those platforms? Where we post stuff on Twitter, right? Sometimes, and then we do stuff sometimes on Instagram.
Yeah, you can't ask me the question after I ask you the question.
At the AeroPod.
At the AeroPod. And just so you know, I didn't even say this. We're at the Arrow, we're the podcast where we talk about everything Avatar, Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra related. And today we have an episode for you about the Battle of Zhao Fu, episode 6.
Yes. So there's been a good build up to this.
Yeah. You know, I want to go into this discussion. I want to preface the discussion of this episode. I felt really disappointed by this episode in a lot of ways, and I don't know why.
I mean, I don't feel disappointed by it. I definitely wanted a little more from it. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, no, it wasn't bad. And we can talk more in depth about that.
Mm-hmm.
But something about this episode to me, I was like, this didn't really speak to me. I don't know why. Maybe I'll figure it out as we talk.
Yeah, let's figure it out.
But anyways, why don't you start us off, Tony?
All right. So last episode, we had Kuvira. Towards the end, Kuvira having a conversation with Korra. And them kind of not really coming to terms with anything other than that she'll like give him until the following morning to talk to Sue and try to work things out. And she's like, okay, great. So apparently there's supposed to be peace until then. But when Korra got back to Zhao Fu, she found out that Sue and the twins had taken off already and were going to take out Kuvira. So
yeah.
They kind of saw it no other way but to do this that night. So we catch up with Sue and the twins, kind of sneaking around the camp. And it's funny because they're like, there's guards posted like out in the distance and stuff, but they have these like loud whips, like very audible whips, but they're still sneaking around somehow with these things, which is pretty funny. So Sue believes that if they're able to take out Kuvira, that the rest of the army would have no reason to continue fighting.
Right.
Most of these individuals have kind of been forced into her army. So if they don't have like the tyrant at the head, like kind of instilling fear that they need to continue to fight for her, then she really believes that most of them are just going to back down.
Yeah. And so, so Sue and the twins, what are their names?
The twins.
Cool. They get to Kuvira's what they believe to be Kuvira's tent and everything like that. And Sue uses her seismic sense to sense that Kuvira is in fact in the tent. And I would like to point out she just stuck her foot on the ground. No, I'm gonna kick off the soles of my shoes or anything like that. Nothing like that. She just kind of stuck her foot on the ground.
All right, and I would like to state that I have this written down right here. It says Sue does a seismic sense thing, and then it's dash ninja shoes Chan !! Not metal shoes Chan !! Used for stealth. Doesn't have to kick them off. I literally wrote this down knowing you were going to say something about it. And my counterpoint is that they're not like boots. They're not made of metal. They're literally soft-soled shoes. So I feel like that's why she felt comfortable enough that she can do the seismic sense thing.
Why would them being made of metal matter if you're a metal bender?
Because it's going to stop the vibrations that you can feel.
I don't believe that.
I don't know. Maybe if she would have taken her soul off, she would have actually been able to recognize who is in the tent, right?
I just like to point out for the record, everybody, I'm ahead in this argument. Anyways, let's move on. So
I'll give you this one because I won the Oreo one.
Oh, sure, whatever. Kuvira is not the one who is in the tent as they sneak in.
Mm-hmm.
They flip her over and it's like, please don't hurt me. And it was Julie. Tony, I couldn't even tell that was Julie. Julie's defining characteristic is her glasses that hang slightly below her eyes. And so without them, I was like, oh.
I'll take your word for it.
They were all like, Julie? I was like, Julie?
Yeah, well, because we never see her without her glasses and with her hair down.
Right.
So she definitely looked like really different than normal.
Yeah, no, she definitely did. As they kind of realize that they don't have Kuvira, the alarms sound, the tent opens up from the top, and Kuvira kind of walks out and says, like, you were afraid to take control of the Earth Kingdom when people came to ask you. You were afraid to join my United Earth Kingdom Emirates. I don't know what they're called.
Yeah.
You were afraid to join my legion when I came and asked you to, and now you're afraid to take me on in a fair fight.
Mm-hmm.
You've always been a coward, and then she kind of just captures them.
Yeah. So she knew that they would try something, and she kind of set up this whole elaborate trap to be able to get her. So it really seems like Kuvira is always like thinking like 2-3 steps ahead. Mm-hmm. Even if like this never happened, she had like a plan set in motion just in case. So we go back to the city and we find out that Kuvira has Sue and the twins, and it's giving everyone until morning to kind of give up the city. But Opal's like, we need to do something. We need to be able to help my mom. Mm-hmm. We need to break them out or something. But Jinora kind of mentions to her, like, you took an oath of like non-aggression. You can't go after her. But it doesn't seem like Opal cares whatsoever.
Nah, Opal's like, that's my family.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Opal is really, really concerned about her mom and her brothers, and she's also just, she feels completely betrayed by everything that Cuvier has done to her family. And so, when you tell Opal to, like, calm down, when you tell Opal to think about this logically, it's like, no.
Yeah, it's just, and then for Cora, it's a difficult situation to be placed in the middle of, because from mm-hmm. her perspective, even as she told Opal, it's like, well, your mom did go try to kill her. Like mm-hmm. maybe we can talk this out. Maybe we can work this out. But Opal mentions, like, you know, she was planning to attack the city. Like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. So there's two perspectives that, I mean, Kuvira originally said, like, I'm not here to take the city. Like, I'm here to show you, like, I brought all my troops and everything to show you the strength that I've been able to acquire and, mm-hmm. and what I've been able to accomplish.
Right.
Again, just, you know, manipulating the situation in her favor.
Right, right.
So it's very difficult to be like, no, like, yes, I want to help your mom, but also, like, she tried to kill her, like, in her sleep.
Yeah, and so essentially what ends up happening, right? Like, Cora, Jenora, Opal, literally everybody, Iki, Milo, everybody are, like, talking. It's decided that Cora and Jenora are going to go talk to Kuvira in the mm-hmm. morning at dawn, because Kuvira is like, yeah, if you don't send your leaders to talk to me at dawn and, like, to bow down to me, essentially, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to attack. And so Cora and Jenora, never realized that rhymes, the two of them go to talk, and Opal, you know, at first it doesn't sound like they want Opal to go. And in fact, I was so confused by the scene, because it sounded like they basically told Opal to yeah. stay back, they but then did. She ended up and going anyway.
But she still said, like, I'm going. Okay. And then no one said anything else, like, after that, like.
Okay, because I had written down in my notes, like, Cora and Jenora decide to go meet with Kuvira, but decide to leave Opal behind, and decide to leave Opal behind is crossed out, and then it says, Opal comes with them as well. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, that's how it worked.
Yeah, because I believe everybody, like, Milo and Iki were also saying, like, oh, look, we'll go too, and she's like, no, like, I can't risk anybody else being captured, like, me and Jenora will go, and then Opal kind of just chimed in, she's like, oh, I'm going too. And that's how it ended. Like, no one like really said anything else. Forever. Like, hey, maybe you shouldn't go.
Yeah. No, yeah. That was, like, a little bit confusing to me. I guess it all really happened really fast.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little back and forth.
So, the things that kind of continue. Also, I will say, as I'm thinking about this, because I'm thinking about, when are we going to talk about the Varric and Bolin storyline? I think we talk about it after. But I think I know why this episode felt unsatisfying to me. And I think that the reason is, and not that it was bad, right? I think that it felt unsatisfying to me was because of the lack of storylines that we've gotten. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's been a theme of each episode. And I think I've seen that as a strength of each episode to kind of really catch us up with what's going on with everybody. And it feels like at this point, we don't need such strong storylines from one place in the world at one time. So, like, I think I was thinking, like, oh, I'd like to see what's happening, catch up with Mako and Prince Wu. I'd like to really kind of catch up mm-hmm. with Lin in Republic City and all of those things that are going on, or with what Tenzin is doing or anything like that. And we didn't get any of that. We just got this kind of one really isolated storyline. These two really connected stories, but very, very isolated. I think that's where, but we'll talk about that again at the end. But I didn't want to lose the thought as it came up.
Okay. Yeah, well, we can come back to that. So they meet Kuvira at dawn, and she straight up says, like, hey, if Sue doesn't bow down to me and hands over, if Sue bows down to me and hands over Zhao Fu, then no one has to get hurt. That's my demands, and I feel like that's fair because of what happened. So again, it's a very tricky situation because she, at this point, she does kind of have a right to put these, like, demands forward with no no change or no expected change because of what happened last night.
Right.
So again, Cora kind of being in that difficult situation of trying to negotiate, but not really having any means to negotiate.
Right. Yeah, she's like, they broke the treaty. I'm like, what am I supposed to do when they broke the treaty? Whose word am I supposed to take, essentially, yes, right?
Exactly.
Cora, Opal, and Janora. Like, Opal even, and I mean, Kuvira kind of eggs Opal on a little bit as Opal's saying stuff like, Bolin would never go on with this plan. Where is he right now? And then Kuvira says something like, Bolin's helping us out with a very special project, but I can assure you he's on board.
Yeah, you've been separated for a long time. He's changed. And it's like,
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then she even talks down to, I mean, she just dominates this entire conversation. I feel like I wrote like little to nothing of what like the responses of like Opal or Korora were, because they barely had any responses for her. She was very dominant in what she had to say, and almost like she was planning this all along. And knew everybody's actions, because she even specifies to Korora, like, you're inferior in this conversation or in this discussion. Like,
I was the one who saved the Earth Kingdom. You weren't. You're irrelevant here.
Yeah. So it's like, you really, as the, even though you're the Avatar, you have no claim on what's going on here.
Right. Right.
Which is something you kind of brought up in the past, where it's like, what is Korra's responsibility in this situation?
Yeah. And I mean, I still wonder, right? Like, I heard Kuvira talking about that, and in a way I'm like, yeah, like, Korra, you don't, at the end of the day, the I think the end of it is like, the truth is that Korra doesn't have to intervene here. I think that everybody can agree that Korra doesn't have to intervene here. She could choose to kind of let this kind of struggle solve itself and things like that, and my question was whether or not it was Korra's place to intervene in this. At which point, the way that things are right now, I think that the way things end up at the end of the season, it becomes really hard to say that it's not Korra's place to intervene. But I also would say that that is an effect of Korra intervening, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, but wouldn't she just, like, be pulling a Roku? Like having this huge dominating force that is essentially taking over places.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that that's right. I'm not saying that that's right.
I mean, historically, that's where I'm coming from. It's like, historically, if there's like this big bad, that's a tyrant, and with Aang in the season finale, with Roku, with his best friend, with Kyoshi and the Conqueror that was like taking over the entire kingdom. So this is, you know, history. This has happened before. Each time they had the opportunity to intervene, and most of them did intervene as the Avatar. So that's when I start questioning. It's like, is it her place to physically stop her, as past Avatars have? Because I know, like, I guess, the political climate has changed dramatically compared to back then.
Right. I guess I wonder, is it the Avatar's duty to fix what is happening in the world? Or is it the Avatar's duty to, like, mobilize the resources for people to be able to solve the problems themselves, right? Like, is it the Avatar's, like, the Avatar, Korra is, like, one of the first Avatars, if not the first Avatar, to learn the elements in a way that it was not intended, like, in a way that the other Avatars never did, really, right? Like, or the Avatars that we know of, right? We know that Kurok, we know that Kyoshi, we know that Aang and Roku traveled the world and spent time in these respective places in the world, learning about their people and building bonds with these communities to be able to be like a diplomat in some ways.
Not much so with Kyoshi.
Well, okay. We know that that's kind of like the idea of what the Avatar is.
If we go back, yeah, if we go even go further back, yes.
Right, we're like that. That these people are supposed to, that the way that you connect with the world and the way that you become a part of the world is by traveling the world and going to these areas where you can, like, you learn how to waterbend at the North or the South Pole, more than likely, because that's where the center, that's where the two centers of waterbending is in the entire world, arguably, depending on if you think that the swamp is, like, a water tribe or not, right? You know, people learn how to firebend in the Fire Nation, more than likely, right? And so Korra learned everything in one place. Really, right? Like, she learned everything in the South Pole, and then she goes to Republic City, and then she happens to airbend. I won't even say she learns how to airbend. She happens to airbend, and then she's back kind of traveling around the world again and never really gets to spend a lot of time traveling the world. So Korra doesn't have what I would say would be like the Avatar, the quote unquote Avatar experience, if that's like a thing that we could say, to be able to say, like, you know, like, does she have the relationship with, like, with Lord Zuko or his daughter to be able to say, like, I need your help. I need your help to help me figure out how to negotiate with this person, right? Does she, like, she can talk to her father, of course, but can she talk to the Fire Nation like that? Is she really that connected with other Earth Kingdom leaders besides Su Yin? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, because, I mean, regardless of the Avatar being the bridge to, like, the spirit world and the physical world, like, they are supposed to be the bridge between the four nations as they are a bender of all four elements. And like you mentioned, being able to travel the world and to have a footing and almost like a dual citizenship in almost, all these different places, it gives them some right to have, like, respect or ability to intervene in these issues. So that definitely makes sense. And the fact that she doesn't have it, like, that it's like anyone that's joined Kuvira's army, it's like, I don't really have a sense of respect for you because we don't even know you.
Right.
We even realize that some of the Earth Kingdom citizens that Milo and them talked to, like, they didn't even know she was a thing anymore. Like, oh, that's Avatar? That's still a thing? Like, it's so disconnected.
So, and that's why I feel kind of conflicted about this, because now I'm gonna get into territory that I, like, don't like when people get into this territory, but I'm gonna make an Aang comparison here, right? and you know how I feel about, like, these Aang comparisons to Korra and everything like that, but Aang, because of his circumstances, and for better or for worse, right, was forced to have to be nomadic. I mean, that was his, like, way of life before. He was in the iceberg, but he was forced to be nomadic. He was forced to travel the world. But at every turn, right, Aang was able to ask the chief of the Northern Water Tribe for help. He was able to ask these Earth Kingdom generals for help. He and Katara and Sokka, like, met with, like, the war council in Ba Sing Se to mount an attack on the Fire Nation. You know what I'm saying? And so, like... And so by the end, like, Aang having to face the Fire Lord and, like, having to face him in battle in that way, to me, was the natural progression of all of the diplomatic work that he was doing along the way.
Yeah, right? Definitely. I mean, you can argue that they were all fighting this war regardless, so they would have, you know, banded behind him anyways, because they need to fall behind someone. But I think the fact that they met him in person, they know who he is, and that's
probably they're fighting, like, this war regardless. But if you think about it, the generals in Ba Sing Se weren't fighting this war regardless. Yeah. If you think about that part, right? Like, they weren't doing anything actually. Yeah.
So it's definitely, like, it's easier to rally behind someone that you know or assist in any way that you can. someone that you've known and that you've possibly fought with already.
Yeah. And that to me is when I say, I don't know if it's necessarily Korra's responsibility to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily saying that like Korra has to step away, but I think that there's just like this kind of monolithic answer to like what her responsibility is here. When I'm thinking like there's so many other things that you could do, you're just not exposed to those things because you spent like the majority of your life in the South Pole, and then you spent maybe the last couple of years in Republic City. It wasn't even until season 3 that we got anywhere outside of Republic City or the South Pole.
Yeah. No, that definitely makes sense. I mean, if she would have been more nomadic and had the opportunity to travel the world, I feel like she would have most likely met Kuvira and had a different relationship with her. And this all would have gone down way different. I mean, with Sue knew her so well and literally told Korra, like, there's nothing, you can't reason with her. Mm-hmm. Like, all that you can do right now is, like, stop her physically. Like, you have to end her. And if there would have been that prior relationship, even if it was a small relationship, she might have known, like, how driven she was in this direction, or how manipulative she might have been, and she might have gone, instead of trying to talk to her, knowing that like the only way to do this is to fight.
Right. So I mean, that's just kind of what I've been thinking. I guess I don't know exactly how we got here, but I'm not saying that Korra shouldn't have fought. I'm saying that I think that there's a lot of steps that Korra can take besides fighting, or at least amass resources and give the rest of the people in the Earth Kingdom some resources to be able to not have to bow down to Kuvira as easily as they have been made to.
Yeah. It's the fact that she came back at this time is the reason, I feel like, because enemies at the gate, Battle of Zhao Fu, like, If it would have been weeks prior, like, maybe she would have had the opportunity to kind of strategize, but I feel like it's so urgent to make decisions now to possibly stop her from taking Zefu, which would, you know, is the last stronghold of the Earth Kingdom that she doesn't have. So I mean, there's that pressure for her to do something now. And that's when they kind of just decide that, Kuvira gives her the options, like, okay, like, if you, like, one-on-one fight, if you beat me, then you can do whatever you want with Zefu, but if I win, then you completely stay out of my business from here on out.
And Korra takes the challenge, and, in short, kind of gets her ass handed to her.
Yeah, it's
it's, I didn't know how else to say it.
It's bad. I mean, like, the confidence that Kuvira had was very surprising, because she even told her, like, use all four elements, use the avatar state, use whatever you think you need. So she was confident enough to be like, I can take you even if you use the avatar state, which is like, I don't know. It was so weird to me. I'm like, what information did you get? Like, yes, you know she's out of practice. Yes, you know she's been healing for all this time. But like, what insider information did you get that you knew that she was so off her game that you can take her?
Right. I will say, I was a little disappointed. Korra didn't even use all four elements. She only used 3 of them.
Where are you supposed to get water from?
I don't know. The mech's steam powered or something.
That's the thing. Like, that's what I was thinking as well. But I was like, when they zoom out, I'm like, dang, there's no water. I feel like if she would have been able to have like water as well as fire, she would have been able to do a little bit more.
Man, I'm pretty sure Hydro Flask would have had something to say about it. something
like a puddle.
Yeah, some anything. Sweat. Yeah, anything. The Avatar universe is usually pretty good at writing in a convenient stream or river or something somewhere, but there is absolutely nothing there.
Nah. But yeah, I mean, Korra went into the fight stating that, like, I have a lot of pent-up rage. So she went in fighting with rage, which is never a smart way to fight. If you fight with anger, then you're blindly fighting. So you need to be smart and strategic, especially against a opponent like Kuvira. Mm-hmm. So we see Korra making huge swings and telegraphing her movements dramatically. So Kuvira is mostly on the defense for the most part, but her movements reminded me a lot of Unalaq when he mm-hmm. fought his brother. Kind of weighted and just made like small like pillars of ice to be able to like deliver like brutal blows to his brother. So that's kind of what Kuvira did, as well as combining it with the metal bands and being able to manipulate like where Korra was going and cuffing her and pushing her back. Korra really didn't have any chance against her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this was another thing about this episode. We spent like 6 or 7 minutes just watching Korra get beat down on.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, they cut in and out. They cut in and out of stuff, but yeah.
But like, it was, I mean, even if it wasn't the full six or seven minutes, like it was a good chunk of the episode that mm-hmm. we just spent watching Korra swing, miss, and then get tripped up, get beat down, get pushed mm-hmm. back. And it almost started to feel like a little bit redundant to me, and it was like hard to watch.
I enjoyed it. Just because I love fights.
At the point where Korra goes into the Avatar state, you know, Korra has decided like, I don't want to use the Avatar state. I want to do this on my own. At mm-hmm. some point, Korra decides that she will go into the Avatar state. And she does, and she's able to blow Kuvira back, and she's able to overpower Kuvira. But just as Korra's about to deliver the final blow, as Kuvira lifts her head, mm-hmm. Korra sees herself. She sees the Phantom once again inside of Kuvira. And that throws her off and knocks her down. She falls out of the Avatar state, and even Jinora says, like, I don't understand. Like, I thought that we got rid of all of the poison, and it's...
What's wrong with her? I was like, ooh. Yeah.
And I think, so actually the last full-length episode that you and I released was the trauma episode, right?
Wait, what?
Was the last episode that you and I released the trauma episode, or did we actually talk about...
No, we did Enemies at the Gate.
Enemy at the Gates? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if we do rewind to our trauma episode and we were saying that, like, Korra's not out of this yet,
yeah,
right? This is, like, literally what happens, right? Like, you mm-hmm. you feel like I can finally kind of face what's going on. And just because you can face it doesn't necessarily mean that you should expect that everything is going to go perfectly.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. This happens.
Yeah. I mean, if you're not prepared for it, there's that false confidence that everything's good. I'm okay. I don't really need treatment or assistance anymore. And you go into the world. But you face those challenges that you don't necessarily know how to handle. Mm-hmm. And it feels like you're just at a wall. But mm-hmm. it's really just... taking a second to backtrack, understanding what are my triggers, what's going on mentally, and what's the situation specifically, and understanding that you might need more tools to continue to live a normal life. And for Korra, it's being thrown in, being in the adversary state could have been a huge trigger for her, because the last time she was in a near-death situation. Fighting someone that was a very overwhelming opponent as well.
Yeah. And so, you know, Korra loses that fight. She's captured by Kuvira, and Jinora and Opal have to kind of come in and intervene before Kuvira delivers, like, the decisive strike. Mm-hmm. Kuvira says, you broke our agreement. She orders her army to attack.
What was the agreement exactly?
I don't know.
Because from what I recall, she said, you beat me, then you can do whatever you want with Zafu. If I beat you, then you stay out of my business from now on, right?
Yeah, I never remember there being an agreement about killing the Avatar.
Yeah, I didn't know this was to... that agreement does not sound like, hey, this is a fight to the death. And I'm going for kill shots here.
She's just making sure that Cora doesn't go into the spirit world and then start telling people to, like, do stuff to her in the physical world. And
yeah, she like, sharpened her metal, and she was ready to kill her. Like, she was, like, no holds, like she's done. Like, she Cora cannot fight back. You encompassed her with Earth. But if Jenora and Opal didn't interfere, like, she would have, I mean, we would have had a new Avatar soon.
Yeah. They make this, like, tornado to kind of block everything from happening while Jenora kind of signals to Milo and Iki and everybody to kind of come get them. Mm-hmm. Milo also just showing off his painting prowess again.
Yeah. Beautiful portrait.
Yeah. But they are rescued, and then the city of Zaofu is taken over.
Yeah, so they have no one else to protect them. They go in to take the city. Kuvira just tells everybody, hey, you bow down to me, or we imprison you. That's the deal. Those are your options.
And then Batar Sr. and their other son, what's his name?
Robin.
Fallout Boy. I'm gonna call him Patrick Stump. I'm just kidding. They both refuse to bow down, and Batar Jr. becomes like angry. He's like in his dad's face, like, you better bow down, like, she's your new leader. And then his dad just looks back at him, he's like, I'm so disappointed in you. And then he just, like, kind of, like, take them away and, like, imprisons them. While Sue and the twins are being held as, like, trophies in front of the rest of Zaofu.
Yeah. She took their leaders. There's no real options that they have at that point. Then we have Batar Jr. telling Kuvira that what happened with Varric. So he exploded, and he's probably dead. But he's like, I most likely can replicate the spirit vine energy as long as I have some help. Right. So they get Julie to help out, since she was helping him out prior, so might know some knowledge. And then something that I never, I didn't catch on, or I never heard, was that she said, start dismantling the domes.
Yeah.
And I never remember her saying that.
Yeah. I don't remember her saying that, and if I'm being 100% honest, because I haven't watched ahead, I don't remember what that means, but I remember big details, not small.
I know where
everything is heading.
You know what happens eventually.
I don't know exactly what the specific relevance of the domes are, but like the Zaofu domes.
Yes.
Okay, never mind. I know exactly what we're talking about. Okay. For some reason, I thought that she meant, like, her, like, army's tents, because her tent was, like, a dome that kind of, okay. No. Anyways.
That's also a dome thing.
Yeah, that's why I was, like, confused for a second.
No, clean up the camp.
That makes a lot more sense. If we go back and we talk about Bolin and Varric's storyline, essentially they've been imprisoned. They're on the train with Batar Jr., and Batar Jr. kind of wakes Varric up and says, like, you're going to go work for us today. This person's going to be your assistant, blah, 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 blah. Bolin, you keep sleeping until you get to the re-education camp. Not exactly exactly like that. It wasn't very nice.
Blah, blah, blah.
Varric scares the other guard into thinking that he's going to die if he helps Varric, essentially.
Blow your hands off.
Yeah, blow your hands off. That thing might be still, spewing through space comets and stuff like that. Like, what? It's like, might be. So Bolin is, like, then made to be Varric's assistant. One thing that I really liked about this episode, I think that this is the episode... Like, I look back at Varric's character, and I am a fan of Varric but I think I'm only a fan of Varric because I know about this stuff, right? Like, I don't think I would be a fan of Varric if this stuff had never happened.
Yeah.
As Varric is, fixing the spirit vine energy and stuff like that, he said he wanted to he wanted to make clean energy. He wanted to make like a good source of clean, renewable energy.
Unlimited source of energy. So that was his original plan. And that makes a little more sense why, if they tried to weaponize it, why he would have been so upset and would have backed away from the project and and was, I mean, so hasty to be like, hey, no, we can't do this. Kuvira, this is too dangerous. What if it gets in the wrong hands? Let's stop this.
Right. And so Bolin is kind of there like, dude, like, why are you helping them? You know how bad they are. Like, you know what's going to happen. And then I really like this line from Varric. He said, you know, he's still kind of like his eccentric self. He's like, you know, I first got this idea when I was in prison in Republic City and that Unalaq monster was attacking and then it was blowing everything up. And I was like, wow. And then he's like, you know what? That monster and this idea, it really set me free. And then he turns around to Bolin. He's like, trust me, kid. I know what I'm doing. And like, just like this really serious kind of, you know, and he like winks at Bolin a couple of times and all of these things. And it's like, it's, I don't know, this like sense of respect came over me when I first saw that when I was watching this way back in the day. And I was like, oh, wait, hold on. You know, like something's different. And I don't know that. I think that that's the moment for me where like Varric's character completely clicked. I was like, wait, is this? I didn't even realize at the time back then, but I was like, wait, is this a redemption arc? You know what I mean? It's like, it's just like, oh, okay.
Varric ends up turning on the spirit vine machine and tells Batar Jr. It's like, oh, that ticking sound, it's a timer for the bomb I made. And you guys have 5 minutes to leave. And it's like, okay, well, what do you think? Like, we would just leave you here? You're coming with us. So he busts out his remote and is like, well, if you try to take me, then I will activate it immediately.
It's like, why do you have a timer and a remote? He's like, well, at first I started making the remote, but I was like, what if you take the remote from me? So I started making a timer. And then I said, okay, well, if I'm going to make a timer, why do I need a remote? But then I thought, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm covering my bases, right? Like, I don't know. It was just really funny. And he's like, me and Bolin are both ready to go down with the ship. And then Bolin's like, no, I'm not. What are you talking about? What?
So they force everybody off their side of the train. And so they unconnect their train car. And Bolin's like, so, oh my God, you're such a genius. Like, okay, how do we turn off the bomb? It's like, oh, I didn't make a way to turn off the bomb. Like,
why does the remote have two buttons on it? Did you see that? The remote had two buttons on it. I'm like, is one explode and one explode harder? What?
So yeah, but he even starts like saying like his goodbyes. So I was like, oh, like, was Varric like serious? Like, he was ready to just die. Like,
yeah, he was like, no one's going to have this kind of power.
Yeah. But Bolin, of course, comes and saves the day. He's able to open the latch at the bottom of the train, burrow under the earth far enough for them to be able to escape the explosion, which was a pretty big explosion.
Big enough that it made a really large crater.
Yeah.
In fact, Tony, do you want to know how large of an object would need to fall from space to make that size crater?
2 joules.
2 joules. Well, that crater is like kind of small, but I think that's something not incredibly dense. Probably around like 15 meters across could probably like make that kind of crater.
15 meters across?
Yeah, let's call it 15 meters across.
All right, so like 10 joules.
Yeah, like 10 joules. 10 joules. Man, I should have made that the joke before I even started talking. Yeah, but it's you know what I find funny is that Bolin has been like the unadulterated savior of Varric this entire time. Like, Bolin has been Varric's biggest voucher. He's like been Varric's friend. He's been like the person who believes in Varric no matter what.
Yeah.
Right? Criminal or not. Like, Bolin's like, no, Varric's not a bad guy. At this moment, when Varric actually did something that was not bad and, like, could have potentially, like, saved the world, potentially, from like some really bad stuff, potentially. Bolin looks at him and says, "I hate you." And it's like everything that anyone had ever said about Varric to Bolin in the past, like finally clicked. It
makes sense. Like how did Julie work for you this long?
But it's like ironic because it's at the moment in which like it's at like Varric's noblest moment in which Varric in which Bolin sees like the kind of lowlife that he actually was for most of the time.
Right? Yeah.
So I don't know. I found that kind of funny.
Yep. And that was the episode.
That's the episode. I think I want to give this one like a 6.5.
A 6.5. That's pretty low.
It's lower. Yeah.
So you felt like you wanted some more, but not necessarily of the storyline that we had, but of what everybody else was kind of doing.
Yes, because I felt that there were redundancies in the storytelling in this episode. I think that we cut back to Cora getting her butt kicked multiple times, and we also cut back to Varric and Bolin, like to Varric fixing the spirit vine bomb and Batar Jr. asking questions. Like, we got that sequence. We got nearly an identical sequence of that twice.
Yeah.
We got nearly an identical sequence of Cora getting her butt kicked. The one thing I will say is that in that fight when Kuvira just rotated the ground under Cora and you could see the lines where the ground had been rotated and everything, that was cool. But I felt there was just a lot of redundancy, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's, oh, Sue and the boys are like trapped in pods and they're being held in front of the army as like morale, like we can take this city because we've taken its leader. And then at the end it's like Sue and the boys are on top of the steps in front of the army as the army takes over the city for morale, like we've taken your leaders, so we're gonna take the city. And like Cora's getting her butt kicked, Varric's fixing a bomb, Cora's getting her butt kicked. It felt like a lot of back and forth to tell these two stories that could have been told in A, half the time, and B, left time for more character development for some other characters that we haven't caught up with in a while.
Yeah, that's true.
Asami and Hiroshi really kind of needed some of that screen time, and I don't, and they're like, they're not gonna get it really, and it's just unfortunate. Yeah. So I think that to me, just the redundancy made it feel a little bit less.
No, that definitely makes sense, because I think I was pulled in with the fight scene just because I love fight scenes, and for me, the way
we haven't really gotten one yet this season.
Yeah, the way Kuvira moves is, I'm very envious of it, honestly. Mm-hmm. Her stance and her movements is very much so like a boxer, and it's like those slight movements to that it's like just enough to get out of the way of incoming attacks, but not enough to like to be using like unnecessary amounts of energy. I'm just like, oh my god, like I wish I could do that. So I feel like that's why I particularly was like more entertained by those back and forths.
Yeah,
but now I kind of see like the other parts where they were kind of redundant.
Mm-hmm.
So I was gonna give it a 7, which is slightly lower than normal. But I think I might also give it a 6.5.
You don't have to drop, like, if, and that's the thing, like, I feel like if to you the fight scene is more important, right? Because there are episodes that are completely carried by their fights, right?
No, but like I wasn't really thinking much of the, like, the Varric's back and forth, and then also them taking them prisoner, but also like showing them and then also doing it again. So I definitely see that where there could have been room, like obviously there could have been more room for stuff.
Yeah. But so that's kind of how I feel. I think it's the weakest episode that I feel like we've gotten this season.
Yeah.
Is it weaker than a 6.5? I don't think it is. I really don't think it is. I thought to myself the other day, like, wow, we don't rank anything like lower than a 6 very often.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just because it's a really good show. but yeah, I don't think that it goes lower than a 6.5, but I'm really excited to see where we go from here.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts, Tony?
Original Oreos are the best.
Cap. That's cap. That's cap. Anyways. Everybody, thank you so much for watching The Arrow. Tony, can you take care of this, please?
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in once again. We appreciate all of your support. And my name's Tony.
And I'm Chandler.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.